This is the No Dubba Podcast. I'm Brian Hogan, and today I'm joined by Denis de Klerk, a full-time volunteer software developer, and Denis is joining me from Belgium. Thank you very much for taking time out of your Sunday.
Hello!
Hey, Denis. To start off, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
I am Denis de Klerk. I live in Belgium, and I'm a full-time volunteer developer. I have autism, and I'm a public speaker. I speak about accessible software and co-working with somebody with autism.
And recently you were made a Microsoft MVP, is that right?
Yes, and it is the best thing in my life that happened to me. I'm so happy with this recognition from Microsoft.
And what kind of conferences do you speak at, Denis?
A lot of conferences. I spoke at a lot of NDC conferences. I spoke at some conferences in London, ComSkills Matter. I spoke at Microsoft Ignite in Orlando this year. I spoke at a lot of conferences in Europe, and I have a pretty nice schedule already for the fall and for the start of 2020.
Yeah, so the first time we met, I think, was in London this year.
Yes.
And you had, as the conference ended, you found out you were going to go to Minnesota for an NDC in the US. And that was going to be your first time in the US.
Yes, and that was a childhood dream.
But you've been back since then. You were speaking at Ignite just a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, two times. US and the same 7-Chain Magic. I invented the hashtag 7-Chain Magic was all about it. In 2019, I'm 7 years and I'm volunteer. I work as a volunteer developer, and 7 is a magic number, and when 7 is there must be something happen. My life dream must become reality, going to the States, and I've been twice already.
Can you tell us a little bit about the volunteer work you do, please?
As a volunteer, I work at two places, in Ithaca, a centrum for people with intellectual disabilities, and I have my own non-profit DD soft, and in fact, I do the same. I experiment, I learn people how to develop software for people with disabilities, like people with intellectual disabilities. I speak about insights, and also I talk either about working with autism, about volunteering, about free time project, about tech for good, yeah. And that's part of my work. I see also the conference talks as part of my world. I want the world to be more accessible for people with autism, but also for people with all other disabilities, like people with intellectual disabilities and so.
What does that mean when, for software, let's say, to be more accessible for people with mental disabilities?
I have a lot of talks about this. You can work with simplified layout, you can add text to speech in your applications, you can have less content per screen, use specific colors, you can just use easy word language. By example, if you talk about salmon or cod, just use the word fish, basic language. Yeah, I also have a nice talk I presented about software for people with intellectual disabilities.
For the rest of the podcast, we're going to talk about working with programmers with autism and about your own history as well. But before we do that, can you tell us what autism is?
Autism is an official diagnosable disability. It's a neurodiversity disability. It's something in the brains. And a lot of people with autism have a mismatch in communication, in executive functioning, and in linking context. And autism is about all these things. It's a different way of being, a different way of thinking, and a different way of processing information in your brain.
When did you realize you had autism?
When I was 13.
What was the thing that made you come to that?
I was bullied a lot at my first grade of my secondary school, and I couldn't live with it again. And in the school vacation, we have it in summer in Belgium, and before I had to go to my second year, it didn't work anymore. I crashed completely. I went to a clinic, and then I get the diagnosed autism.
And then what happened? Did you have to go to a different school after that?
Yes, the clinic gave me two nice things, not so nice things. First of all, they left me with a trauma about the clinic. And then they said I have to go to a school where, in fact, I didn't want to go. I want to do a technical job, like electronics, was my childhood dream. And I had to go to a school for accountancy. And why was that? Because it was the only school in my neighborhood was specific helping or helping, assisting teenagers with autism.
And software wasn't an option there, is that right?
No.
But had you picked up software yourself at this point?
Not that point, 2 years later.
Okay, so then how did you come across, or how did you get started in software?
And I had a good friend, and still a good friend for me. And he was a programmer. At this time, he is an IT ops. He's called Mike. And Mike was at this time a programmer, and I was so jealous of him. And I wanted to be a programmer. I want to be like him. And Mike helped me rolling into the software development thing. I went to the library. And in my free time, when my schoolwork was over, I was studying the book about, at this time, Visual Basic 6, the complete handbook. And it was, the world was going open for me.
You liked Visual Basic 6?
At this time, I shouldn't use Visual Basic 6 anymore. I like C# and the .NET environment right now. But at this time, when I was 15, 16, 17, for me, Visual Basic 6 was the holy grail.
Yeah, I remember using Visual Basic something inside in Word. I think it was Visual Basic Macros.
Yeah, Visual Basic, VBA, Visual Basic for Applications. I know it.
Is it? Okay, yeah. I remember I had to do something like generate tickets for some school event, and I had to increment numbers. And even though there was only 50 numbers and I could have done it by hand, I instead spent 5 hours doing it with a for loop or something. Nice.
I experienced this time also. It was fun.
And then...
But VBA still exists.
Oh, it does, of course. I'm sure. None of these things go away.
If you go to Office 365 or Office 2016, you can go to a VBA editor.
So what age did you leave school then, Denny?
If I leave school, I had to go to a fabric for people with disabilities because, in fact, they told me I had to do that because I wanted to do college, high school, but in my school I didn't have enough math. And people told me, you can't do this. Being a programmer, a developer, is not your life. It's not possible for you. You have to work in a fabric for people with disabilities. And I hated it.
Who told you this?
A lot of people. People from my school, people who the embodiment have organization who help, people who are just graduates, a lot of people, not my parents. My parents were always very good for me, but people, official advisors say that to me, a lot of people.
What year was that, Denny?
It was between 2007 and 2009.
Okay, so not that long ago.
But in 10 years, there's happened a lot in the field of autism and the field of people with disabilities of the workflow. 10 years ago is in this specific material a long time.
Okay, so what's changed since then? Do you think someone, if you, someone like you, but let's say 10 years younger, would they have the same limited options, or would there be a different way of approaching it now?
I think it'll be better for the new ones. I think quite global. I think and the global knowledge about this material is better.
But in Belgium, let's say, would programming be now something that would be encouraged for someone like you who's 10 years younger?
Maybe. I think yes, maybe yes.
So tell us a little bit about what you did work at. You said you worked at a factory of some sort?
Yes, a factory. And in Belgium, they place all the people with disabilities in a factory to do line work. And it was manual tasks by hand. You didn't need your brains, but for me, as persons with autism, if I didn't have to use my brain is doing things that me and not the things that I like.
What do you mean?
If I have to do manual jobs and I can't use my brain to write on a talk or to program, then my brain is taking me into a trip of bad things happened in my life, and I get negative thoughts and bad thoughts and worries. And the only way that I can cope this thought is by doing to give my brain work, like developing, writing a talk, a blog post. But if I sit at the fabric and I have to do 3 hours, only manual task, with the task I cannot think, then my brain is taking me on a trip where I don't want to be.
So then, in 2011, your time at the factory ended. Can you talk about that?
My brain brought me so far away in negative feelings, and I crashed completely. And then I got an embargo. You can receive a fee if you have disability. At this time in 2011, I wasn't able to work due to mental health issues. My mental health issues were so strong that I even get real physical pain in my body. And for this reason, in Belgium, I could go on a fee. And as a government, to say we pay if you have an official diagnosed difficulty, disability, problem, and if there is an official label, then we give you a fee per month on your account, on your bank account. It's not a lot. It's not a lot. You don't going to be rich with that fee. Sometimes NDDsoft, even in the last years, we have to try for sponsorships and so. And I called my fee from the government a poverty fee. You can live with this, you don't gonna die, you can buy your food, you can eat, but it's not a luxury salary like most software developers maybe can have.
So then after the factory, I think you said you joined a coaching program for people with intellectual disabilities.
Yeah, a coaching center. This, with my autism, I don't have an intellectual disability, but I was looking for, because I had my fee, and I was looking on what can I do in my days. Everything is better than sleeping until noon, I'm waking up until night, and doing nothing between. And then I get in contact with the coaching center for people with intellectual disabilities in Ostend. The name is Ithaca, and I said, I want to volunteer for you. For nothing, not for money. Hey, nice. And what is your talent? And I say, maybe it doesn't matter, but I can program. I'm a hobby programmer. But maybe I can fix some PCs and do some administration for you. But they say, oh my God, we have a project in the fridge. And it's a project for people with disabilities, with learning disabilities, and to address disabilities. But at this time, we experiencing difficulties for working this project out. Can you make it a second life? And I really build a good life for the project.
What programming language were you using there?
It was not the official programming language. It was it's visual programming. It's from third-party software, and it's visual declaring on the screen what should happen.
I see. How long were you there?
I'm still there, but not as much. I always experimented and had variation in hours or week I go to there. But at this time, we are Sunday, and tomorrow, my Monday afternoon, it's a thing. Monday, I go to Ithaca, and I'm going to help them. I built further on the project, but at this time, I also built the website of Ithaca. Ithaca, that one is built by me. And I already, in my mailbox, I have a list of things that can be adjusted on the website. And tomorrow, I go. I don't do it from home, where I know. I go to the center, and my desk is between the people with the disabilities, with the coaches who help the people with disabilities. I have my desk, I grab a can of coffee, and I help them on technology questions.
And then you launched your own software organization.
Yes. In 2014, I get some weird ideas. In 2012, I started in Ithaca. But as I said, it was visual programming, it was not .NET, and I really always loved Microsoft programming languages. I love .NET, and I learned about open data and so, and I say in 2014, I'm going to try to work a situation where I help all other people all over the world with software and .NET written, people from Ithaca, but also other people in Flanders at this time. And DDSoft still now has a lot of transitions. At this time, our biggest focus is helping others with IT. We make proof of concepts, we give lectures, and we assist people all over the world And I still write a lot of .NET. And because I'm a Microsoft MVP, developer technologies, I'm more than enough in touch with .NET.
True. The things you present on at conferences and events, some of what you talk about are the challenges that you face in a work environment and the advice you would give to, let's say, your colleagues on how to help you with those challenges. So can we start maybe going through a few of those things?
Of course.
What would you say are maybe the main challenges that are particular to you, and how should someone react, respond, help?
For me, I always talk too much. And not everyone likes this. And in combination of my talking too much, I have a limited topic of interest. I give an example of a limited topic of interest. When I was at the factory, I already programmed. At this time, it was not VB6 anymore. It already was .NET. And I talked about my coworkers, line workers, about programming and Microsoft technologies. And for these people, it was a limited topic of interest. Or I could talk even at the DSoft right now, or in Ithaca. I still have the, I don't call it in program anymore, but a limited topic of interest. By example, tomorrow I go to Ithaca, and it's a coaching center for people with intellectual disabilities. And I could talk almost about my experiences at Microsoft Ignite 2 weeks ago. And sometimes limited, so the topics that not everyone is interested in. I talk too much. I don't always feel when I have to be quiet.
So what should I do if we're talking and I want to, let's say, change the topic or stop you? What's the appropriate way?
The best way is indicate very clear. In the beginning, show a little bit of interest, by example, into the conference. And don't say, but Denny, at this time, we are working on this, and this is not important. I always advise, don't block the person completely from the beginning. It shouldn't be fun for me if I never am allowed to talk about conferences. By example, you can let me say something, and then you have to come back on point. You can always say something about your own interest. By example, I don't think on you right now, but on coworkers in Ithaca. By example, a coworker may have an interest in dancing. Then she can talk, oh, last week I went to a dance performance and it was nice. And then going back on the work topic. By example, what are the focus points of today to work on? And tomorrow, by example, it's updates to the website.
I see. What other kind of things would you come across or suggest?
If I do work, not now at this time in Ithaca or at the DSoft, but in the fabric, if I have to do work that I didn't have to use my brains, I really can be stuck in bad thoughts. Really bad thoughts, and then it's important that you give the person with autism a work that interests him, or that you give me a work that you trigger something that awakens my interest. An example can be, and even I didn't have a technology job, but I can believe for me, if I apply for a job as a developer, and as a junior, the only thing I have to do is doing data input, maybe I should be stuck in a thought. And then it's important to trigger me with work that really interests me. For example, not only doing data input, but also let me write some extra functionality to the program, by example.
When you say stuck in a thought, are you talking about stuck in a thought for an hour, a day, a week?
No.
How do I recognize it?
If I'm going stuck in a thought and I'm talk less, and you're going to see my healthy vision, my being, my global morale will be down and down and down. You always, if you talk to me, I can be completely away. That's what people can say, being in their own world, in their own world, completely distracted. Then you have to show, Denny, I'm here. Please work further, my friend.
But this sounds like it's more of a, it's not a very short-term thing. No. It's more like at least a few days or a week or two or something.
Not always. Not always.
Okay.
By example, you can be stuck in the thought at your work because the work at this time doesn't interest you, but you can go home and in the night you can do completely good stuff also for your hobby or in your winning your living, your normal life. But if you're going back at your work the next day, you directly go into the bad thought again.
I see. And then when you say give a person more interesting work, I imagine that can be difficult in a typical office environment. Sometimes there is boring work to do and it might go on for some time.
I believe there can be boring stuff to do, but if you know the situation and you know the autism, you can give all the boring work to the newcomer or the person with autism, or you can split it to all the co-workers and all do a bit of boring work and a lot of fun work. There are choices.
That's true. I think you mentioned to me that eye contact is something that can be a challenge at times.
Yes, for me, very much. Experience it in my conference life. I can do a presentation, a talk, and then after my talk, if people come to me to get some further interactions, for me, it's really difficult to remind myself. It's polite to have eye contact. But for me, as people with autism, eye contact is very difficult, and I rather mind eye contact. Even I have a coach, and by some topics, I never make eye contact. I just look to whatever I want, but not to her eyes.
I see. And then for the person that you're talking with, is it a matter of accepting that, or?
Yes.
Okay. It's not trying to encourage it. It's not trying to change anything.
Accepting and understanding. By example, if I don't make eye contact, that is because my autism that I feel very uncomfortable. And then it's important that the person I talk to knows that is because then it's autism. He feels uncomfortable. He has to think on this, or he has to think on this. He or she doesn't have to think. He don't look to me because he's not interested in me. That's a very different setting the scene for himself. If I don't make eye contact because it's too difficult for me, or because I'm really not interested in you, that's a different. And that's the people have to know. I have interest in people where I talk to. If I don't have interest in somebody, believe me, I don't want to talk to him.
Actually, that leads us on to another thing that I think you, in your presentations, you talk about being too honest at times. Can you give an example?
Something that can be very embarrassing. My example, if somebody looks bad, you look terrible today. You say it as person with autism. But too honest in this situation, but also, I think a lot of people sometimes do things that they shouldn't do. My example, I think at work, going checking the Twitter instead of developing code. And some people like me, couldn't resist the nice thing of going on Twitter, before my boss going to see you are on Twitter now instead of in your developer environment, I should go knocking on his or her door and saying, I'm sorry, I went a few minutes on Twitter. Just to be honest, in a lot of situations, if they do something wrong, if they see something of somebody, or just say they know something that other people don't know, if they ask something, please be true. Yeah, they can be very true people with autism.
What about things like pressure, deadlines?
For me, very difficulties. One of the biggest difficulties I experience is, but sometimes I have to rethink this, and it's very... At this time, I'm thinking, and for me as a person, I could say as a person with autism, but also as a person, as a human being, I think a lot of what I do, why do I do it, do I need this, what happened in the past, what happened now. And in the past, I always, if I had deadlines, I had difficulties, I was stressed. And then I have to make the word and to have to say, at this time, if I speak at conferences, I also have deadlines. If you have to present a talk, the talk has to be ready, I don't know the word. But you know what I mean? And it went well. But by example, if I have to do, by example, data input, and I have to fill in invoices into a program. And I think that if I see they are really too much invoices that they have to put in today, it can stress me.
What's the way of coping with it, or the alternative to the deadlines that come with common day-to-day jobs?
If I give advice in my talks, I try for people that don't, is more for myself, it can be better to give me a proof of concept, some experimentation, something that doesn't have to be finished, or even as a deadline farther away in the future, that the workload is lower, and it's sometimes it's also important that you don't stress on the deadline. By example, if I know there's a deadline, I already can stress on this. By example, if I normally I make a project in 1 week for this type of project, for example, for a little project, and the project has to be done in 2 weeks, but you know, normally I make it in 1 week, maybe it's better that you don't say it has to be ready within 2 weeks. Because if I know it has to be ready within 2 weeks, I can already worry too much, but my work is slower and maybe it's not ready within 2 weeks. So it's not always, if the deadline is on a further distance, maybe you don't have to communicate about it or over-communicate. And yeah, and the time span better. Do you understand? Make sense?
It does, of course. Another thing that you highlight is hesitance in asking for help or assistance.
Yeah. Sometimes it's way too late if I ask help. By example, let's say we keep in programming because it's a developer's podcast. Sometimes I have to figure out I have to program something new and I have to work with a new technology, new implementation, a new API, and I could work and work and work to find it out myself, to prove that it's possible, that I can do it. But maybe just asking a coworker who already implemented this APA can be a lot easier, but it's very difficult for me.
One of the challenges which was striking to me when we were chatting before the recording was how much time and effort you put into planning. Can you explain that?
I have to put a lot of work in planning. Everything is planned. For example, I don't have a car because I also a bit bad-sighted. I cannot drive. It shouldn't be safe for myself and for the people around me on the road. And I never go somewhere with public transport if it's not planned. But also, if I have to do groceries, the better everything is planned, the easier it is for me. Yeah, I do a lot of planning. For example, this podcast was really planned in my agenda. And today I had an earlier appointment with somebody, and I really planned that there's enough time between the previous appointment and you, by example.
But I think you also mentioned that the planning is not only about work and, let's say, the meetings. It could be things as, let's say, common as planning dinner, buying groceries, that those things are a challenge.
Yeah. As I said, so by example, knowing if I want to cook, knowing what's needed, and if I want to make this, I also need butter and salt, and that's all easy ones, but sometimes seeing everything what's needed, and then in the grocery, the difficultest thing at the grocery, and in fact, I'm a good programmer, I can speak all over the world, but doing groceries is very difficult for me. Let's imagine tonight you want to eat steak. And you go to the grocery and you plan everything for steak. You want to make some sauce with the steak, for example, mushroom sauce and fries. It's very easy. But let's imagine you are in the shop in the grocery and they don't have steak anymore. And then the complete brain process, okay, if I don't have steak, then maybe I can eat mushroom sauce, and maybe it's not okay to eat fries with it. I have to think, I have to progress everything with a new kind of meat. What are the other ingredients that I need for a good dinner? It's really difficult for me.
within a work context, how important is feedback or communication with, let's say, the co-worker or the boss?
Very important. And communication is important that you do it directly or on time and early enough. For example, once I was at the work and I did something wrong. I was too slow and I had the wrong approach of doing that. And then they sent me way too long. But if you say it directly and on a polite way, for example, this is what they're doing, it's not like we like to see it. It's not possible. Say it directly and polite. Sometimes you do something wrong and you really don't know why and how long will you wait, for example, for the next evaluation. Then it's way too late.
One of the things you mentioned earlier was, you know, give someone or give you the likes of a research and development piece of work. But quite often that could be, let's say, medium or long term, where you're digging into something, you have to do it by yourself because you are the researcher, you're going to be the most knowledgeable person. How do you then, and that can often be an isolated position. I've spent months doing research on something and I'm pretty much working by myself. Is that a good thing for you or a bad thing for you?
I think it can be good. It can be good. It don't have to be good, but it can be good. Difficult question. I think it can be, but it don't have to be.
Another thing that you, in your talks, you talk about seeing the talents.
It's very important for somebody that you see the talent and not only the difficulty. For example, somebody in programming can have a specific way of converting to Lambda. And this can be, he can be very quick in it, and that can be a talent. For example, every developer can write Lambdas, but for the one person in your board, it's way more, he do this way more faster. Then I should suggest that every other developer give all the stuff that has to be translated into Lambdas to him. And not only that is my work, and sometimes, for example, the person with the specific talent in writing good and fast Lambdas, an approach could be give him an odd approach could be give him just the work that he should do. A better approach, new approach could be, oh, but his talent is to make good Lambdas. We give all the Lambdas to him. That's the only thing he has to do right now. But it's his talent, and his Lambdas going to be better and better.
One of the things that you highlight as well is your ability to think about problems in a different way. Can you give some examples?
I believe it. I think I'm very creative. And creative can be if you want something and it's not a normal way, you can work around this. It's about the courage and thinking different. It's what I think out-of-the-box thinking. Sometimes people can be in a problem and then just the unique thinking, the other way of thinking can solve this problem directly. A complete example, to develop from other people in my country, it was not logical with my invalidity. And not everyone should think about, I'm going to start on my own, a complete progress to start a non-profit. And for me, it was so easy to make the link. If I want to do this, I want to develop for people, I want to have budget, but not on my own bank account, for example, because then it isn't good for my fee. Then very creative, and if you want something, oh, I'm going to fund this and this project. Another thing can be, they can be very creative. And I also board member as a volunteer of a group of people with autism. And sometimes I see very unique ideas if some people want something and that they use to try some things not everyone think about.
Denny, any final notes before we wrap up for today?
I invite everyone to connect on me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Denny de Klerk. I am a heavy user of the hashtag Dreaming is Believing, of course, like the hashtag should be altogether. You can re-watch my talk from Microsoft Ignite about supporting coworkers with autism. It has a very good feedback. I did also a talk, I think, in September at JavaZone together with my mom. The talk was called How Do I Help My Son? It was about communication with me, with my autism, and my work and private life. It had a standing ovation. The recording online is available. I can send it to you. And you can see me at DevSim in Adesno in February. And I'm doing the talk Autism in Tech. And the other talk I'm doing again, the talk at my mom that I did in September, I will also again. It's at JFocus, and both DevSim and JFocus are in Sweden in the same week, in Stockholm in the same city, so you can do both of them.
All right, what I'll do is I'll put links into everything into the show notes. People will be able to find them there.
Okay.
Dinny, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
If you liked this episode, you might also like episode 117 with Arthur Dohler on mental health advice for developers, or episode 56 with Suparna Damani on repetitive strain injuries. The opening music was Return by Nisi23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Algorithms by Chad Crouch from the album Arps.